Welcome to Thing Making, an audio podcast for, about, and by people who make things. So today on Thing Making, I'm talking with Tim Denton. And Tim Denton is one half of About Face Productions with Annie Forbes. So Tim, yes. I'm sitting here in your workshop with all of these beautiful objects around. This is where you work?
Yes, well this is the dry area. There's a workshop on the other side of that door over there.
That's right, I've seen your workshop as well. And so Tim, you've had lots of experience, I know, as puppet maker and as mask maker.
Yeah,
mostly mask, yes?
I started with mask. And clown, and developed into puppetry because I was also working on parades, and so I was making giant puppets. And then when I got and started working with Annie, we started bringing the puppets into theatre, and so we started creating smaller puppets to work in theatres. Well, she brought her puppets, and I introduced her to sort of large puppets and masks, so we blended our sort of work.
Really. Mm. Yeah, you're a good team, and you've done various projects, large and small.
Yes, we have.
So some of the larger ones you've done.
Yeah, one I was creating, was some light. They're essentially lantern puppets, but it was a Bunjil the Eagle. This was for the Indigenous round for the AFL, and it was the performance took place in the MCG, and so Bunjil had to have a wingspan of 15 metres.
Wow, that's
and
huge.
It was, and his large head, and we had three operators, and so we essentially made using cane and silk with lit from inside. And even though that seemed really huge, when you see it on the MCG, it was actually didn't look as big as that.
Yeah.
And there, a lot of other people were involved. This was actually a piece. Margie Mackay was the director of the whole piece. And a lot of puppeteers got together and made the different giant puppets.
Mm.
And so, I've sized like that. And also for NIDOC Week in Western Australia, I created a waggle, a rainbow serpent, which was operated by 12 people, and it was 36 metres long, and it was lit from inside, and again it was silk, but it was painted on the outside like landscape, and it came through a whole lot of burning, the grass trees. They set fire to the grass trees, so
right.
It was this at night, and there was this amazing white smoke and the flames of off the grass trees. And the rainbow serpent came through that smoke and came. It was great. I really enjoyed working with the tribe over there.
Yeah, it sounds amazing.
Yeah.
And in contrast to that, some of the smaller scale work that you do with everyday found objects and some smaller puppets that you make or you adapt objects that you work with. What are some of the puppets that you've made that are smaller scale or that you've found an object and you've adapted it? Because I saw just outside the front of your house, outside the front of your workshop, you've got a rock that's got wheels attached to it.
Yes, that's right.
Old wheels that look like some kind of toy carriage that you've adapted and attached to a rock out there. So it looks kind of fun.
Yeah, well, that's some characters I've been playing with, which is that they're essentially, I suppose they're puppets, but they're also, they're static images for exhibition, and like the rock is essentially like the bumblebee. Essentially, the bumblebee can't fly apparently aerodynamically, but it doesn't know that, so it can fly. And like those two characters is Archibald and Buckers, and they're the two characters that they've made an aeroplane out of a rock, and they're going to set off to fly it. And it's about these. It's essentially with those characters I've been using them as a sort of, a performance of these characters who are sort of innocents, and they try to create an adventure in their life, essentially. And that's one of the ones. Others where they sort of have been just in different areas, different places. And if you go to an exhibition of these characters, you'll see them in different parts of their life, and they're static, but they I've never animated them yet.
And so I suppose they're quite hopeful, aren't they? Because one of the rocks is quite round and short and heavy, obviously. Yes. But it has wheels, so it has a longing to move, and yet it can't. So they're quite hopeful. And do you always make those characters out of the same materials, or do you change them around and make them out of all kinds of...
Yeah, well, the rock, and I also you'll see a rock with wheels on the outside as well. That came from visual puns that I used to play with my sculpting, and that's a rock wheeler. And I used to have a sign that said, "Beware of the rock wheeler," and people would come out. And imagine a rot wheeler as opposed to a rock wheeler.
Yeah, oh, great.
So sort of, it's play on words. And once I made a large sculptural stone apple with a tap on it, and I called it a tappan apple, which is a model of the original Mormon tappan apple. And it was sort of just play with words, I think, and playing in that sort of, I think humour is sort of underestimated in terms of visual arts, because... people are so serious about the whole thing, and why not play with visual puns have that lightness instead of being so seriously heavy?
Exactly. Do you think that maybe that the puppetry work that you do and the mask work you do brings humour into the sculptural work you do, or they all inform each other?
Oh, I think they do, yeah. Mm. Originally I came from clown.
Yeah.
Clown and magic. And then I got involved with mask and found that was really quite amazing to play with that. And you were talking about materials before. I did try so many different materials with mask, like rubber and foam, and as well as leather and paper. But I always go back to leather and paper because they absorb moisture, they are organic.
Yeah.
And so that really works with the actual mask performance, whereas the plastic masks and things don't absorb moisture. They essentially don't feel part of the face, and so the materials really
Okay.
say what I should use.
Yeah, it's interesting that organic versus the plastic products to use. So just in terms of practically, when you're working with the mask and you're using leather or paper, it absorbs moisture, so it's practically nicer on the skin.
Yes.
But also you're talking about the contact between the material and the human body that you have with organic materials lends itself better to the mask performance?
It does, because also the other thing about it is the heat of the face and the moisture also makes the masks bend slightly, so they actually fit your face a lot better as you work with them.
So they're more pliable, so then they're more expressive, so they add to the performance in that way,
do you think? In some ways, yeah. Well, there's still the physicality of the body that gives life to the mask, but it just feels, the mask is a lot more, feels part of the face. It's that organic aspect of it, I think.
Right, yeah. And do you think it's the same with using, because obviously your puppets are made with different materials.
Yes.
You said already cane and silk, but I've seen some that you've made of leather and wood.
And paper mache.
And obviously foam as well. So there's all kinds of different materials that you use to make the puppets. Do you think the same thing applies when you're using organic materials for a puppet that you've got your hands on?
Well, it depends. For example, if you wished, the magic of Procast and being able to use silicon moulds means that you can actually reproduce many different, the same mask over and or same puppet over and over again to make multiple image.
Yep.
And you can adapt them and you can work with that. So I do like using those.
Yep.
But then sometimes, as you say, I will use a foam and use a filler over the top, or the Japanese style, which is wood, and then working with an egg and plaster sort of moulding material that you can actually get finer details by sculpting onto it. And so there's a lot of different ways of working, and I think it's just what you need is how you make the work, really.
Yeah,
you fit with your needs, really.
Yeah. I think other puppeteers have spoken to me about when they're in the process of making a puppet.
Mm.
And it might be the same for mask making as well. About happy accidents with the material.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I can see that you're smiling, so I think that you can relate to this term of happy accidents.
Mm.
Can you think of an example of when you've had and made a discovery just by putting your hands on working with material, and you've changed direction in a good way with because you've had a happy accident?
Yeah, I think, well, there's right through my life I've had happy accidents in some ways. Like when I was working... years ago, I worked in New Zealand on a television series called Public Eye, which was the equivalent of Rubbery Figures here in Australia.
Okay, yeah.
And the guys working there was Richard Taylor, who's known around the place. And he we were working with clay to start off with, and it was we needed to work it completely. Before the clay dried out, and it was really hard to work, and it was hard to sort of change things. He happened to be at a dinner, and there was this guy, and there was a margarine sculpture on the table, and so he played with it, and then came back and said, "Right, okay, let's start playing with margarine." And for the whole series of those puppets, they used margarine.
For really?
The sculpting, it's a sculpting margarine. It's that white sort of butter, ersatz butter, I suppose. But the thing about it was that it didn't dry out.
Yeah,
it didn't. You could cut something off and then put something back on, and it would stick automatically.
Yeah,
you could do all sorts of stuff with it, and then it would mold beautifully. It would carve. You could do all sorts of things to it. And then when you made the moulds, because at that stage we were just using rubber latex, you could steam clean the moulds so that all the margarine was taken out. And it was a really good material to work for.
Reuse it? So when it melts, you can put it back in the fridge.
You'd carve it out, and then you'd just get the residue off with the steam cleaning. But the major problem with that was that they lived in a flat, and they tracked, like it fell on the floor, they'd walk on it, and so margarine was tracked right through this house.
Okay.
It was pretty nasty stuff to use in the end because of the fact that it was margarine and it was using fat.
Yeah.
And so it got everywhere, really.
Yeah.
But at that time, it was this happy accident that happened.
Yeah, that's a great happy accident story.
Yeah. And I suppose the whole thing of like all those making those large puppets, the lantern puppets, there's technology you use. Like, for example, you're using kite technology, using even Venetian blind type technology and stuff to get ideas for movement and the like. But then you'd still have things of not being able to find the material, and so having to look around and find something else that you can come to. Like, I found that in New Zealand, you go and buy a certain material, and you know where to get it from. You come here to Australia or go to America and work over there, and suddenly those materials aren't available.
Mm.
And so you suddenly have to go, oh, no. And so you find a different way, and you look around and you find stuff.
It
can either be better or and you suddenly go, this is what I'm going to use from now on. Like, for example, with paper mache.
Right.
You find a form of paper that you like using. Like, I never use newspaper. People always seem to get into using newspaper for paper macheing. But
you don't like newspaper?
Oh, no way.
It's
thin. It doesn't have any strength to it. It is because it's made from trees, from wood as such, it has a lot of acids in it. So it breaks down, whereas if you use a rag paper or something like that, it actually absorbs the glues and stuff that you're using, and you're able to make a mask or a puppet with two or three layers, as opposed with newspaper you have to. We've all had that experience at school where you've had to use something like eight layers, and because you're wanting to rush it, you have all the eight layers at once. and then it takes a month to dry.
Exactly,
and
so, yeah,
and
yeah.
So working with different papers, you can actually find that they dry a hell of a lot faster. And, like, you know, you can make a mask in 2 days quite easily.
I'm a big fan of Chuck's Super Wipe.
Yeah,
actually.
Chuck's is good.
Yeah, I quite like that. I think it's tough. And
it is tough, easy. But again, it doesn't have as much integrity, so you have to build up the layers a lot more.
Yeah, but I've never made a mask out of Chuck's Super Wipe, so I don't know how it is to work with and how absorbent it might be. And
It's like, well, I've done with Chuck's, and again, it is that sort of, it is beautiful to use. You know, you get but because of its softness, you actually have to have something else forming the strength, because it doesn't have, it's floppy. It stays being floppy.
Yeah.
You don't
get
the hard structures that you do get with paper, because of the fibres soften, and then once they dry, they become hard again.
Talking about technology, and you said you've used kite technology and Venetian blind technology and these kinds of everyday technology, if you like, that can inform, say, making a big sculptural puppet.
Yes.
What about computer technologies for designing or making? So I noticed when I went on a tour around Global Creatures, they had just got a 3D printer at that time and were quite excited about it, of course, and were building little model dinosaur parts and sending them across countries to build the prototype for what was to become larger puppets.
Mm.
And so I'm just wondering what you think about 3D printers as, say, perhaps building a puppet from a 3D printed model parts.
Well, absolutely. Well, the thing is, it's essentially like another, you know, like, for example, people talked about, you know, computer graphics. And essentially, if it's a tool, it's like a pencil, it's like a pen, it's like a texter. So it's essentially another tool to use, really. And, like, to being able to make a hard shell, a hard three-dimensional shell, is a great way to work in terms of the puppetry. And I have seen that, you know, there are problems in that. Like, one guy once saw one of my puppets and said, "Oh, yeah, look at that. That's great. I can do that with a at that stage with a three-dimensional printer." And I said, "Yeah, great. How long does it take you to do that?" And he said, "Oh, to make something like that, it would take a couple of days of printing and working it out." And I said, "Well, with sculpting and with making the molds and I can create it in a day, and then with my once I've got my mold, I can churn out 2 or 3 a day." So it's again the material that you use and what ability it brings you. And like the amazing thing about, you know, computer printing is that, as you say, you can send it on a thumbnail to someone else in another country, and they can print it out where they are, so that if you, that makes it amazing. So I don't know. There's so many different ways and so many different materials that I would use that way. But in saying that, I've just started doing a course in working with wood and using Japanese jointing.
Okay.
And so, which is really traditional, and using hand chisel. Everything's hand tools, and part of me is sort of saying, "Oh, yeah, but I could do this with a router, or I could do this with that." But actually using the hand tools, it's just another way of actually finding a way to work. If, I could use a router, but I can also use hand tools.
Yeah.
And so I use the method that I would require for making it, you know, and using electronics if you want, lighting and all sorts of stuff like that within the puppet. And also technology in terms of remote control and also radio control as well. So there's a lot of possibilities there.
And each of those things, I think, have their advantages or are appropriate for a particular kind of puppet that you make. So when you're doing this Japanese wood carving?
No, it was jointing. Learning about joints.
Right.
And it's for building houses. So how do I take that? You know, like I'm, you know, the, it's, I try to learn, some sort of different skills, and fit it to what I do in my sculpting or my puppet making or my mask making or my props or making sets or whatever. And it all fits, I think.
Yeah.
This one, I think, has just taken me into this whole business of going back to look at. Old school, I suppose. Which old school is not always passé. Bring ideas back in, because the guy that I'm learning from, he learnt old school. He grew up in Japan in a small country area, and he was taught by a master joiner how to build temples and the big Japanese temple gates and all that sort of stuff, totally without nails or glues or anything else. It was all jointed. And using joints and wedges and everything else, the whole thing was just put together. And by just pulling out a few wedges, you can take the whole thing down to nothing, back to being the lumber. So it's sort of really old school, but there's some really amazing possibilities in there that I don't know whether I'm going to use them sooner or later. You know.
Yeah. It just made me think when you were talking about. Not using nails and glues and so on, it's almost like original flat pack furniture. So you could ostensibly design and build, say, a temple or a room that flat packed down, couldn't you?
Because, oh, absolutely, because that's what they are.
Is that how it could work? Yeah, you could then put it together and pull it apart again and so on. So I'm wondering, it made me think of puppet booths, for example, or even a portable theatre.
Yeah. Absolutely, because
that could be built that way.
Yes, because I one of the best sort of puppet booths I've seen is Richard Bradshaw's puppet booth, which is, he's very thin wood, and he drills holes between them and just uses nails as to hold the whole thing together.
Like
and
pins, yeah.
They're like pins, yeah. And essentially at the end of the show, he just pulls all the pins out, and the whole thing just breaks down flat really quickly, and it's incredibly light.
Yeah, there's a lot to learn from somebody like Richard, who's been around for a long time and toured quite a bit. And so the way they cut corners, or that they've learnt how to perfect packing and unpacking, because on top of the booth they've got their lights and their sound and their puppets and hopefully their lunch and their costumes and so on. So there's a lot to learn from that.
Exactly. But also there's the other thing of actually coming... changing materials as well. Like when I first made these giant puppets, they were these women, they were aunties, it was for a parade, and they were 12 foot tall, 3 meters tall. And when I first used them, I was really playing with bamboo at that point, because I had a friend who was really into building with bamboo, and so I made these things and they worked all right, but they were quite heavy, because bamboo, even though you think is, oh, it's so really light when you pick up one, when you put it together to make a large puppet, it was really heavy. And my poor puppeteers, they were put inside these puppets and one person operating a puppet, and they were sweating at the end of a parade because it was they were just so heavy. And also the other thing was that they creaked as well when they moved. It was like a ship under full sail. And so after that first experience, I then started playing with aluminium and proper and using sort of jointing things with aluminium, and suddenly they were lighter and they could do so much more.
And that's still durable.
And they were still really durable, and we still had the same heads and everything on them, but they just, it just worked really well.
Yeah. I've been on the other end of operating a bamboo parade puppet, and even with a proper flag harness, it was extremely heavy and hard going. So it's always great when the puppet maker thinks of another solution.
Exactly.
Because you're right, because every single screw, even though you think bamboo is light, it adds up, and in the end you have to carry it for a long period of time and make whatever it is look beautiful or effortless. And it's easier said than done, because you do want the material to be durable, but it has to be light as well, and it has to be flexible. And I think that's the key to looking at materials that can do all of those things, it's quite hard.
Yeah.
And especially if you do enjoy the organic material. You know, some people don't want to work with plastic and they like working with cane or wood.
But the thing is, it's you find the right material to work for yourself, really. Mm. It's the whole thing of, you know, light materials are really important for me. And some of the plastics are actually heavier than if I was using paper.
So a question for you is, do you think the material speaks to you in any way? When you're working with the material, do you feel like as a puppeteer or puppet maker, mask maker, you listen to what the material's telling you to do?
Yeah, well, I suppose in some ways, like, you get to know what material does what. And how much you can, whether you're using fabrics or whether you're using latex or whether you're using foam. And I think you know what material is best to use. I think talking to you, I think, is works in terms of if you're carving or sculpting. I think it's the sculpting that actually does it. If you're working with, say, plasticine, it's quite different than, say, working with clay, working with wood, working with the carving. And I think the puppet that you make, once you have made a puppet, it suddenly you find things that you didn't know that were there before you started making it. You have an idea about making a puppet, and you say, okay, right, we're going to do it this way. You get the puppet made, and the first bit of rehearsal, we think, oh, well, it doesn't do what I thought it was going to do, but it does this other stuff even better.
Yeah, or you have to re-adapt it or re-change it. Right, yeah.
It was like when we made the puppets for Storm Boy.
Right.
The designer said he wanted it to be made of driftwood, and it needed to run and dance and fly and peck and all sorts of things. And it was totally impossible, the thought of going and finding driftwood and joining it together somehow to make this puppet. But in the end,
you could be searching for driftwood forever, couldn't you? The
yes,
right kind
exactly.
of driftwood.
Yes, exactly. And it would have been heavy as. So in the end, we came to the, you know, he was quite unmoving, but in the end we sort of said, look, we can do the whole thing with plywood and actually jointing it like... I suppose, you know, like they put boxes together where you cut half of it and they link together.
Yes.
We did that. And then we linked the whole thing together and then we painted it sort of a grey, so it had that grey driftwood look. And then we covered it with some cane. We put cane around it. And then we found this stuff that looks like, it's a hat-making material called cinema.
Yeah.
And that's sort of semi-transparent. So we were able to put that over the whole thing. So it looked like it was all organically made. He didn't want to have feathered feathers, and he wanted the flying ones, their wing feathers, to be grass.
Yeah.
And that made it really, how do you do make it from grass, you know? And the whole object of making these birds that looked like they had seagrass wings, that seagrass, after about 2 or 3 days, dries and it gets all crumbly.
Yeah.
So no way could we have done it, and would have been too heavy and hard to work because he wanted the wings to open and shut. So then we used, fan technology, so the wings could open like fans, so we had to take the fan struts out of giant fans. We went and found a whole lot of Chinese fans.
They were
either paper fans, but the actual struts of the fans were sort of cut down bamboo, very fine, and so we then put silk over the top of them. You know, we made sort of almost like grass looking stems from silk over the fan struts, and made the fans open and shut, so when the wings opened, they were opened like a fan.
Fantastic.
And so I'll just finish that. And so it was sort of almost a backward thing. But then when we had the puppets working, we had they wanted them to fly. And I had controls that you could pull and made the wings open. But it was actually easier. And he wanted all the puppets to walk and then fly. So we said we had to make two puppets. And we actually got around it by instead of having a control that you pull to make the wings open, which would have been really cumbersome, I built the wings so that they folded down and then put elastic bungee cord between the wings so that when you released the bird, the wings would fly open with the bungee cord.
Right.
And so, yeah, so we had to sort of work it that way so that, so we actually were able to fulfil the brief, but we sort of found a whole lot of new techniques in doing that, because the brief was, or the restrictions were very restrictive in a way.
Mm.
They wanted to have the grass looking and they wanted to make it look like this, but yeah, so we had to have these elastic or a bungee sort of opening methods. And so all we could do is carry the birds out, the actors carried the birds out in the boat and they were holding them. And when they let them go, they just threw them in the air so the wings flew open and then they grabbed the handle that was underneath and then they flew from there. And so that was all that puppet did. And then they had another puppet that did the running and with the beak and everything else.
Because, clever, that's
yeah,
very
but
clever.
That was the whole object of it.
Yeah, that's very clever. And if people are listening and they want to see images or videos of your work,
yeah.
I can post links to the About Face
Productions
website.
Yeah, the About
website.
Face Production website, and that shows a lot of those puppets and things that are there.
Yeah, which is wonderful to be able to
yes.
see it. And so just before we finish up talking to you, just a final question about what's your favourite material to work with and why?
Mm. Well, again, it's in what I want to work. Like the puppet we've just finished, I really like using the closed cell foam, which is EVA foam. I really like using that because you can cut it and do all sorts of stuff with it.
It's dense, isn't it?
It's quite a dense foam, yes.
Dense, yeah.
But it also isn't like styrene, which is crumbly. That's quite firm. But that's for doing bodies that can flex and move.
Mm.
But then if I was working with, like masks, paper, leather, and like we've just finished a puppet that's got the EVA foam inside, but then it's got leather around the outside. And because I really love leather, the way that it stretches and bends. So, yeah, it's... I enjoy using stone for some of my sculptures, but then other things might be steel, and I like using metals, so it's all, it's finding the right thing to get what you need, as opposed to, I suppose it's like someone saying, I'm a sculptor, I work in metal, but then it might be that you actually, I'm a sculptor and I want to get across an idea, so I'll use whatever I need to get that idea across.
Yeah.
It's a different way of thinking. It's like, like a glassmaker saying, yes, well, I only work in glass, so I don't think I'll ever make something that can be animated or anything.
Mm.
Or I work in wood, so therefore, it's always going to be a different,
Yeah, it's good. You're across the board on quite a lot of materials.
Yeah, I think this is a major thing. I can do it in terms of performance. For example, a stilt walker says, oh, yes, I do all my work on stilts. But then really what you can say is if I need to be 8 foot tall, then I can probably use stilts.
Yeah.
But normally I would work on the ground or whatever. I think it's the whole thing of using the materials or using the methods to create the idea that you want to get across.
Yeah, which is why it can be sometimes difficult working with a designer who has already decided what material they want a puppet to be made in, and you almost have to work backwards then to find some sort of compromise between what they've designed and what you're going to make.
Exactly.
Yeah. Whereas your starting point for building or making something comes from the idea of the design or the function of what it's got to do,
yes.
or the idea of what you're trying to convey, and then you work towards choosing a material from there.
Yeah, and also the style of puppet as well. It's like that whole thing of what we said earlier, when we were before this interview, about the idea that with the Albert again with the pelicans for Storm Boy, instead of having these flying objects, that suddenly you go when they fly, you suddenly go to shadow puppetry.
Yeah.
So you can actually say, well, I can do it with shadow, or I could go to a whole different form, or I could go to miniature.
Yeah.
Instead of having these giant puppets, you could go to miniature and have tiny little, or marionetted, or lots of different other possibilities to actually create the same effect without having to be so pedantic about the right size and how you work.
I think Julie Taymor has talked a little bit about her design process because she uses a range of different styles of puppetry and mask and costume to best illustrate whatever the story is. So I was going to ask you a little bit more about technology, but I might have to save that for Annie.
Okay.
Because I'm hoping to interview Annie as the other half of About Face.
That'd be great.
Productions,
yes.
About using new technologies, because I know that in some of your work together you've used video projection.
Yes.
So I'll probably save some of that for
her. Yeah, she's got a lot of thoughts on that.
Yeah. So any last advice for any emerging puppeteers who might be listening, because you've got such a wealth of knowledge and experience?
I think go for it, but also be prepared to ask for help, because there's a lot of us out here, and like I'm getting being a bit of an old guy, so and sometimes I'd really like to give back, by all means, you know, like it's a whole thing of sharing. Collaboration is not a one-way street. We there's a lot to be shared about what we do, and I think that's the collaborative thing. The more people see of puppets, the more they want. So just because I'm a puppeteer, it's really great to be able to share with other people so that they can take something they might learn into their own work, you know. Because I was taught by so many different amazing people over the time, and it's really nice to be able to give back.
Yeah. So, Tim Denton, thank you for talking to me on thing making. And I hope to talk to Annie soon, and good luck with all your future projects.
Thank you. I hope that came out. I realised I had my hand over my face, so it would probably be all right.
Oh, yeah. It's great. Thank you so much, Tim. I was talking to Danny, that's right.